This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer. Tom Jossen of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, he's a senior fellow. He and his colleague Bill Raggio keep the Long War Journal, a chronicle of the vast canvas of the Ummah from the Mediterranean to the Hindu Kush and the battle with Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and now the Taliban, which is a subset of the larger war that we've witnessed for 20 years. However, in recent remarks before the Senate Banking Committee, Tom was asked Q&A about what happens next, observing, is there a way forward with the Taliban to help the Afghan people? For example, one version of what could come next is that the U.S. attempts to assist the Afghan people left behind in tatters, in great concern because they're under a regime that is non-transparent and bloody-minded. And the question came up about what leverage, what devices, what tools, what windows does the U.S. have? And Tom, I believe, it turned to Pakistan. Pakistan is intimately involved with the success of the Taliban because the ISI, the state security forces in Pakistan are acknowledged widely over many years. This isn't an issue where there's a debate. To sponsor, to support, to provide intelligence and what you'd say at this point, huzzas to the Taliban's success. Do we have a way in through Pakistan? And concomitantly, do we have a way in through the money that we're holding for the Taliban in the U.S.? Can we find in any fashion that they'd sit down with us because the money's useful?
You know, again, John, I think, you know, we have 25 years of experience here, and what we've learned is that money has not provided America or its allies leverage over the Taliban or Pakistan. That's the truth of the matter. When it came to fundamental issues, I mean, again, the Pakistani state cooperated somewhat in the initial period after 9/11 for sure. I think there are complex reasons for why that is, including fear of retaliation by the U.S. But, you know, I think that the broad experience here across 25 years is the U.S. didn't really know what it was doing and didn't at any point in time have leverage over these actors because it didn't really understand them. You know, and the thing is, you know, what's interesting about this too is that, you know, you hear it from State Department types talking about leverage, and yet the State Department's own reporting tells you that the U.S. never had any leverage over Pakistan in particular, because remember, it was the Trump administration in 2017 withheld military assistance and military reimbursements from the Pakistani state, you know, several hundred million dollars, and did so again in 2018. And yet the State Department noted that this did not change Pakistan's behavior when it came to sponsoring, harboring, and facilitating the Taliban and its senior leadership. So I think that the bottom line from my perspective is that, you know, I try and work in terms of evidence and what you can observe. And the observables here are all bad. At no point in time has the U.S. really understood what it's doing and doesn't really have any leverage over any of these actors. And it doesn't make any sense to go forward and pretend that it does. That to me is, I think, a message that a lot of people in Washington don't want to hear. They didn't want to hear me give it. But I think it's true. And I think, you know, that's the point of us saying the emperor was nude all along. Look, nobody knew what they were doing here.
The money is also being offered by our adversaries and people states that we could say are not our allies. That would be China, Russia, Iran, even Pakistan is talking about aiding the Taliban. Is it wise for us to step away from the table? Is it tactically useful and watch our adversaries provide aid and gain access to Kabul?
Yeah, I mean, the point that Bill and I have made is that if these actors want to recognize, you know, they've enabled or in some cases sponsored the Taliban's Islamic Emirate and helped the Taliban resurrect it for all these years, if they want to continue to do business with them and they want to sponsor them, then that's nothing. The U.S. doesn't really have the ability to do much about that other than, you know, pretend, you know, erect more sanctions or enforce sanctions, something like that. But what it does is it lessens, I don't think there's any reason to think America has any leverage over the Taliban, but, you know, the leverage theory is that the U.S. can do business with the Taliban because they need this money. Well, my point is that they have these other sources of money and they are all adversaries of the U.S. or enemies of, or in some cases outright enemies of the U.S. And so that, that's another example of how there are these avenues which the U.S. does not control and does not have any leverage over. And the idea that the U.S. could somehow exercise leverage in this environment seems fanciful to me.
The $9 billion or $7.5 billion, depending upon the reporting, that is in U.S. banks. Is your sense, Tom, that the State Department is looking to release that money, saying that it'll go to the Afghan people who are facing a difficult winter without the support that the U.S. and its allies have provided? Do you think that money's going to the Taliban?
You know, so far I haven't seen any firm indications that that was the case. I mean, obviously the Taliban wants the money. You can see on their social media accounts are agitating for it. You know, part of what I've talked about here too are two things. One, obviously money's fungible. So if the U.S. is going to talk about providing humanitarian aid to Afghans, then it should be kind of in-kind or hard goods, you know, food, medicine, that sort of thing, not money or anything that can be easily converted into money. Because the point is that money can be used for multiple things. And so to provide them with hard cash, there's no guarantee that they're going to use that on humanitarian purposes. And when you provide them with hard cash, what that does is it means that they can spend use less of their resources on other things. So if I have $2 and I want to spend $1 on humanitarian aid and $1 on terrorism or my authoritarian regime sort of enforcing its Sharia rule in Afghanistan, and you give me a dollar for humanitarian aid, well, now I have $2 for my nefarious purposes, right? So that's why, you know, when it comes to hard cash or any kind of monetary assistance, it doesn't make any sense. And I think at the Senate banking hearing, that certainly I didn't hear anybody talking about releasing the funds outright to them.
Turning the story around, does the Taliban have leverage over the U.S.? There are, depending upon your source of information, a great number of people and families and vulnerable people left behind who seek exit. Some of them might be long-time threats, threatened by the Taliban and are in hiding. I hear stories, Tom. I don't know what it comes to. But in any event, that would be a way of converting that cash that's in U.S. banks into doing good for people. Do you think that's credible, to buy the hostages that the Taliban is holding?
I mean, look, the U.S. State Department announced $64 million in humanitarian aid to the Taliban's regime, just in the weeks after they took over the country. What was that $64 million for? You know, what are the terms of it? I mean, they try and discuss it in pure humanitarian terms, but, you know, was there a quid pro quo? Was there some sort of haggling involved there? I mean, I don't know, but I would ask that question if I were a lawmaker for sure, because, you know, I'd want to know why it is that the U.S. is so eager to give this money to the Taliban. I mean, I'm sure that they're trying to extract more cash payments, and they are using, as you say, John, they are using Americans trapped in Afghanistan as leverage over us. And so I wouldn't doubt that they're seeking more financial aid under the auspices of humanitarian assistance when it's really some sort of quid pro quo.
Bill's idea was using NGOs to help the Afghan people, but I understand there was a member of the Afghan parliament who testified on the same time you, a young woman, I believe, who recommended not providing money. Did I hear that correct, Tom?
Well, that's Naheed Farid, who was a member of the Afghan parliament. And she actually made the recommendation of working with NGOs, which if that's possible and the Taliban will allow it and the Taliban doesn't exercise control of it, sure. My warning here is that the Taliban's Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan is an authoritarian regime. I don't see how they're going to allow any independent channels to operate in Afghanistan. You know, I think it was Senator Toomey asked me at one point, would the Afghan Taliban allow the UN to have a peacekeeping force in Afghanistan to sort of monitor and control and dispense humanitarian assistance? I don't see any way the Taliban's going to allow that. I mean, the Taliban rejects UN peacekeeping forces and is openly adversarial with respect to the UN and various parts of it. So I don't see how they're going to allow any kind of foreign troop presence in Afghanistan when that's really what they were agitating against all along.
So what we've come to, Tom, and Bill's remark at one time in your conversation is that the wise course now is to stand back and do nothing and watch as the Taliban develops. Is that, I know that's not something to do, but is it possible that's where we are, Tom, because all the other choices are not attractive?
Yeah, I think disengaging, doing nothing other than monitoring security threats or, you know, just playing at the margins is always an option. I think one of the problems with Washington policymaking elites is that they always think that there has to be some answer, there has to be something to do. But that sort of phony thinking guided numerous wrongheaded decisions over 20 years in Afghanistan. Sometimes there's nothing you can do because people don't understand it. And part of that's, again, I know I keep saying this, but that's why the point of my testimony was, folks, the emperor is nude. The emperor was nude all along. You can't pretend that the emperor is clothed now, that the emperor knows what it's doing, because he doesn't. And that's always been the point when it comes to the Afghan war. So, I don't think that any – I think that a lot of the sort of diplomats or national aid people are going to want to dress this up as they know best and that they know how to deal with the Taliban, and I just wouldn't buy it.
Tom Jostlin, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and Bill Raggio and their colleagues keep the Long War Journal. Tom and Bill also have Generation Jihad, and I'm basing my remarks on their most recent podcast. However, there is the matter of what is going on in Afghanistan that we can see from the outside. And when we come back, ISIS, if that is the case, and also Al-Qaeda, that is the case. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.